Last week on the show, as we search for music that we can download and play for the masses that we really enjoy and want to put out there for people, I discovered you guys, and it bothered me that I didn't know about you from before. And I was really inspired by the story that you've been together for 11 years.
Hey, share with the listeners the fact that we have people on the phone.
Yeah,
right,
I know. I'm going to get into that.
Okay, you're saying you guys and the people outside are going to be like, well, what are you talking about?
Fantastic.
You're not ever talking to me.
All right,
pull
it straight in right now.
Jumped on a galloping horse
here. A member of Silo the Husky on the air tonight with us, and we also have a co-founder of Tiberius Records, who they're currently with, and they were really cool about getting in touch with us upon request and showing up tonight, and I just wanted to get into their story a little bit and just say how I found them, and I want people to hear it.
Okay, so who do we have on the phone?
Silo the Husky. We have Pete Klein.
So should he...
Pete Klein's the bassist for Silo the Husky.
Pete, you there?
Yep, I'm here.
There you go.
So you're the bassist for Silo the Husky.
Yes.
All right.
And sorry if my answers are slow or delaying. We're on a computer phone line, so it's kind of breaking up a little bit. So I might repeat myself or sound more stupid than usual.
No problem. I repeat myself constantly.
And we also have Mike. I don't know, Mike, what's your last name?
Montgomery.
Mike Montgomery from Tiberius Records, a cool label.
Hey, Mike, where are you guys located?
What was that?
Where are you guys located?
It's Cincinnati-based label.
Cincinnati-based label?
Yeah, Cincinnati, Ohio.
And Silo the Husky, they've all come to reside in Columbus, Ohio. The thing that got me about your story...
It's about 2 hours.
Go ahead.
The thing that got me about your story is that the band's been together for 11 years. And in doing research about the band, because I liked you guys so much... I was like, man, what longevity. And then I dug into your story and I found out about you guys had a deal with Cargo Records in San Diego. So you actually had kind of the signing that a lot of bands covet. And then that kind of didn't quite work out. And I just wanted to catch up with you guys about where you are now and what the goals are for the music to come. And I have some surprises for you. But first, you maybe can start with how Silo started out.
Okay, my turn, I guess.
Yeah.
More or less. I mean, Brian, Arlep, the singer, and I knew each other in college. We went to Ohio State together. And, you know, we had kind of been in a band in college and then kind of lost touch. And then we kind of got back together, you know, outside of college and played with him for a while. And I kind of filtered in and out of the project a little bit that he was in. And then I kind of moved in full-time to play bass. And we went through a couple of drummers and put out a 45, and we did a couple of cassettes for friends and that kind of thing, and did a lot of in-house recording at the time, and a lot of stuff down at the recording workshop in Chillicothe, Ohio. And just kept on moving forward with what we were doing. And, you know, Brian was the principal and has been the principal songwriter and lyricist for the band. And, you know, we've gone through, I think, 3 or 4 drummers over the lifespan of the band, and we've gone through 2 guitarists. And, you know, just been plugging along since, I think, like 91 or 92. It's been quite some time.
Well, you know, before we go any further, it'd probably be cool to give people an introduction to what you sound like. And I wanted to take Hotel Mary Appalachia off of the Cargo album that you did. It was self-titled, and then I hear that you expanded the album to be Fight, recorded a few new songs, but that was the first track I heard, and I really liked it, and I want to put it out there, and then we'll move through to where you are now.
So you guys won't be able to hear this.
Banked up the car at a pond, so think it could have been far. There was a light on a hill. Say what you want, smoke what you want, Hotel Mary.
awesome.
Yeah, that's it. That's a cool track.
Love the track.
It's got a lot of... It's really full, you know? It's got a lot of... It covered, like, the whole spectrum without, like, using a bunch of keyboards.
I think that... I think Silo maybe gets pigeonholed into alt-country stuff, which is a lot of what I've read in reviews, and I really don't think that's the case with you guys, but maybe you can fill us in on Hotel Mary Appalachia.
Yeah, where did that song come from?
Well, I, you know, Brian, you know, when Brian writes songs and writes lyrics, you know, he deals a lot with, you know, his hometown, which is in Canton, Ohio, which is about an hour and a half northwest of Columbus, pretty rural community, and, you know, tap into a lot of his, you know, experiences either growing up or going back home, that kind of thing. And that song was, you know, the lyrics from what Brian told us was basically, you know, him going home. It's about being at home and dealing with his family, that kind of thing, you know. And when we wrote the song musically, you know, everybody kind of brought in, he had an idea, we kind of all came in with our own ideas, and that's how the song basically worked itself out.
It must be tough a little bit sometimes to be cornered into one genre. Comparisons to Uncle Tupelo, Wilco, some people have even brought up Neil Young and all that stuff, but I feel like you guys are way more relevant still, that you could fit in on playlists now.
I think it's, you know, everybody needs, and I think Mike would agree, you know, and he's listening in the background. I think, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you see music, people need something to, like, kind of either assimilate the music or kind of compare it to, so they can make that, you know, they can understand where the music's coming from. And, you know, and,
right.
And I think pigeonhole is a bad word, you know, but I think you're always going to get that. I think no matter what band you play in, you're always going to be compared to something else. And, you know, I don't know if Mike wants to chime in on this or not, dealing with the bands that he's experienced with or even the bands that are on his label. Yeah, it's unfortunate, but I think that's part of, you know, the industry or the being in a band as general or in whole.
Yeah, it's like you've got to market yourself on one hand, but then on the other hand, you want to appeal to as wide an audience as possible. So... It's tricky.
And this is a quote, Pete, this is you, Pete, from an interview you gave. We were trying to sell them, Cargo Records, a perception of us, while they were trying to sell us a perception of what they wanted us to be. Soon we learned that they weren't what they made themselves out to be, and to a degree we weren't what they wanted. And I think that there are probably millions of people out there that have been close or had the deal, and it just didn't match up. For whatever reason.
So yeah, that Cargo...
Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, so Cargo's like a major label, and you guys were going after a deal
Cargo's
with them?
Cargo's indie-based out of San Diego,
oh,
but
indie.
Kind of like mini... Like with maybe even mini-major. They have a lot of stuff going on.
So, I think, you know, when you're given an opportunity, you know, in a band and you're always, you know, you're pushing yourself forward and you're trying to be productive and you're trying to sell yourself to a label, you know, you're trying, in a way, you're kind of selling yourself maybe as not, you know, what you think they are. And in that case, I mean, trying to relate it to our relationship with Cargo Headhunter, here's a label, being a Cargo Headhunter, that they had Blink-182, they had great bands like Drive Like Jay who on there. You know, basically, after they sold the Blink-182 catalog off, they were living off the profits of the, you know, of that sale,
right,
and bringing other bands in, hoping to farm them out to, you know, whatever major label might be interested.
And then
in
the guys up top are just going, "Bring me more of those. Bring me more of those Blink-182s."
And
right,
you're
exactly.
Not that.
Right, or not that. I mean, they brought in a lot of bands when they brought us in that were across the board for genre-wise. So. You know, they're trying to bring in the band that they think they can sell off to, you know, a major, or sit and nurture for a little bit before they sell them off to a major. You know, and at the same time, we're selling ourselves to Cargo, you know, saying, yeah, we're going to go on tour, and yeah, we're going to do all this and do all that. And maybe that wasn't the case. Maybe, you know, we wanted to go out on tour, but maybe didn't have either financial means or, you know, fill in the blank, being able to follow through with that as well. So, I mean... In a way, you know, they're kind of throwing up a facade saying they can do all these things for us. And in a way, you're kind of saying, hey, you know what, we can do that too. But, you know, not really knowing that you might not be able to follow through with that or not. You know, you're just pitching yourself, I guess, would be a really lame term. But that's kind of how the industry is. You're pitching yourself and they're pitching themselves to you.
Right.
And this
exactly.
comes to this is a good spot for Mike, and I couldn't figure out where to exactly put this, but because it's about the label founded in 96, as I have researched it to be, by Rick McCarty and Mike Montgomery, and is it Toby Weiss?
Yes.
Okay. There, I don't know if this has any connection to Roman history, but I was just digging around why Tiberius, and what I stumbled on was the Tiberius, a Roman emperor. The reign of Tiberius is a particularly important one for the Principate, since it was the first occasion when the powers designed for Augustus alone were exercised by somebody else. But that, dude, that sounds random. But
no,
to me,
no, it doesn't sound random. It's just, wow, you're really, you did your homework.
I
on
just,
this.
I'm like, look, I mean, who are these people? Where are they? And I just am thinking, you know,
aren't they in Columbus?
The state of the major record label deal and them controlling everything
yeah,
is breaking down.
That's a great. I didn't realize. I mean, that's yeah, a great name
that's
for.
That's why I sent it to you.
For,
he's going to say it's Captain Kirk's middle name, but I know that it's probably more than that.
All right, so where did the name Tiberius come from?
Oh, I don't know. Cause, you know, it was just a name. You know, I think Rick came up with it and. It was going to be something else, another name, and I found out that was already a label name, and we just needed something. So
if we function on based just no, if we function just based on just it was chance, I will go with this definition because I think that what you guys
I
are
like
doing.
I like your definition. Because,
well, then you can steal it.
Yeah,
you steal
I mean,
it.
Rick was a history buff, so I'm sure he did his research. Hopefully. So.
I didn't draw this up out of my own personal knowledge. I just looked, and I just want you to know that to me it means, based on your name, that the power of the major record label and that whole like empire of controlling music and controlling bands is done, and you guys somehow
good.
Have fit
That's
in
good.
There. You know, if you go look him up, Tiberius is an interesting cat. I mean, it's
Which
funny.
It's why it's fitting that you guys would you know that would agree to. You know, to give us all this music to play on this podcast, because I mean, so many bands out there are all skittish about their music, and they're saying, "Well, you know, I don't want my stuff on the internet." And you know, I mean, I think it's representative of both the label and the artist that you guys are willing to kind of go out there and say, "No, you know, these people are playing our music on a show, and it's getting us exposure, and that's all we ever wanted."
Well, I mean,
you know?
that begs the great question,
yeah,
too.
I think I kind of come at the label, and especially the side of the Husky album that we put out from the same point of view as you guys. Like, I mean, you know, I was a big fan of the band back when they were doing cassettes and back before they ever sent Cargo, and always wanted to work with them in
That's
one way
cool.
or another. And then when I found out that they had this record that they were just kind of, they didn't have any plans for, and they weren't even, as a band, they weren't even doing that much. They were kind of in this gray area where it was like, well, are we going to write more stuff? Or are we going to keep playing? Or what's going on with Cargo? All that, everything had kind of collapsed. And I heard some of the stuff from Pete and Brian and just kind of thought, you know what, I don't care how much money I spend or lose or whatever. I just want other people to hear it because it's fucking awesome. So
that's
it was
that's,
never, it was never, you know, we put the record out like, without even ever expecting them to play another show, honestly. You know, we didn't know if they'd ever play again or ever write another tune or ever
and that might
their guitars
have,
up again or
that
whatever.
Might have a little bit to do with Brian. You know, Brian's statement that taken from, I think, a similar interview, maybe the same one. Brian says, well, it's much better being in a band and being a carpenter rather than just being a fucking carpenter. Regardless, right. we will still be playing, but I don't think anyone would want to deal with a bunch of old fogey bastards, and I think that's crap, and you guys better
well,
keep
yeah,
recording.
Hold on. Let's actually, that's one of the few things I wanted to really speak to is the how is where is Silo now?
Where are we now?
Yeah, what are you guys, I mean, what are the plans? I mean, that sounds like Mike saying that you guys might not be playing. How's things going?
Well, I mean, I can tell you right now that I'm sitting in my living room with my feet propped up in the water, if you're asking where I'm at now.
That's exactly what we wanted to know.
Thank you. Thank you. Making this easy on us.
And I'm wearing a nice little leather thong.
Okay, wait.
Hang on. Aqua Swim Team.
I think it's time to go into another track here.
Hold on. Before you finish that, we'll go into When to Run, if you agree with that track.
Yes,
I think that's fine.
So hold the thought about the leather thong while we play a track.
Hold the leather thong.
And then we're just going to get right back into it. So there's some harmonies in that stuff too. Are you guys? Is it Pete? Are you singing there too, or is it Chris and Brian?
And Brian.
It's Brian and Marcy Mays from Skrull.
All right.
Is singing on that as well, and obviously Chris Bear is doing some backup. But you know, the band really tries to keep me away from any microphone, either in the studio or on.
Sounds like me.
Yeah, we try to keep Bobby away from the microphone too, but it just doesn't work.
I have like a dog cone.
He's
so
like
don't
a
come
magnet.
Hot.
His lips just get right up in there.
Yeah, that sounds great. Okay, yeah, thanks to God. It's like a leather thong.
Yeah,
dog.
Okay.
So wait, let me go back to this question though. Like, what's going on? And then it sounds like there's this thought of like Silo might be taking a bit of hiatus, or they may, you know, you guys might be feeling a bit like the time has come and gone. Where are you guys? I mean, what's the current status of the band?
I think what, you know, if anybody is out there actually listening or downloading this or whatever the case is, I think what you need to understand on our end is that we have done this, I mean, since 92 or 93, or you know, we've been doing it so long, it's kind of taken on its own like state of, you know, it's its own animal, it's its own thing. So when we came out with, you know, Sons of Columbus, which again Tiberius and Mike and Rick were more than gracious to put it out, and it really blew our minds that they really showed as much interest as they had. We had known Mike and Rick for a long time before then with their bands. I think where we're at right now is that, you know, Brian, the singer, got married. You know, he's trying to start a family. You know, Chris Bear, the guitar player, he got married, and his wife is getting ready to have a baby. You know. Believe it or not, I'm out there racing motorcycles right now, you know, since we've stopped playing and taking this break. And, you know, Neil Schmidt, who is now drumming for us, as you know, is working at Workbook Studios in Columbus. So, I mean, we're taking a break, but, you know, Brian and I talk back and forth. And, you know, it's one of those things when we've been together for so long and you are really strong friends that you can go back to it anytime you really want. And I think we get enough stuff off of being in a band that we can go back, you know, whenever we want to. But I think right now we're trying to focus on the things that we've just kind of set aside that were important to us, but we now have time to kind of do. And I don't know if that makes sense to anybody out there.
So you're saying you have a life? Oh,
yeah. Okay. We're trying to have a life. Trying to have a life beyond that. And I think there's a couple things too I want to kind of explain. I'll try to keep it short. I mean, Brian stopped drinking, which was a huge thing for him. That was a huge creative input. You know, when Brian would get loaded, you know, he'd come up with the songs. And he stopped drinking, you know, after he got married. You know, he's trying to do the family thing, and that is great.
Yeah.
And the creative process for Brian might have changed a little bit, but, you know, he still wants to be in the band. He still wants to do it from what we've talked about. But we're, at the same time, not in a rush to go out. It's not like we're 23 and we're trying to get in the Econoline van and drive across the country and keep the doors down and all that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, we're 30 and we want the record deal. We've had all that stuff. I mean, right. And to a lesser degree, you know, we've had the opportunities, you know, and Brian sees this vehicle, the band, Sal the Husky, as an artistic expression. And when he's ready, he's going to come back to it. When I'm ready, I'm going to come back to it, and we're going to keep on doing it. But, you know, right now, we're trying to have a real life outside of the band.
Well, I mean, that's yeah. always, in my opinion, the biggest challenge for any artist, whether it be visual or whatever, not how to keep a balance between the project and the life, and how to mix that. And I think that's a great thing too, because, you know, one of the reasons that I think that everyone here is so hyped on you guys and so really into it is about the longevity
and that there is integrity. Yeah,
right. I mean, you just keep doing it for doing it's sake, for the love, and not because you have to come out with another album because the record contract says you owe them 4 albums.
Yeah, I think we're, you know, I think we've all kind of become accustomed to those bands that are blatantly obvious about the fact that they're out there for the money and that they're out there for the fame and that they want that Led Zeppelin, you know, kind of, you know, rock and roll stardom. And when you come across a band like you guys, you know, that's playing because they love it and they don't care when or if it breaks, then that's refreshing, you know. And especially, you know, when that exposure really starts to hit. I mean, like the Shins, you know, they were playing for how many years before people started listening to them? And we were talking about earlier,
Boy Racer.
It was Boy Racer, and then, but no, but that, what was that other band? Yoshimi.
The Flaming Lips.
Yeah, the Flaming Lips, and even,
I mean, they're best.
And Modest Mouse, too. I mean, all these bands have been, you know, out there for a long time, and then now they're coming to the surface because it's easier to get exposure, because the indie music is popular, and because, you know, it doesn't take the might that it used to take.
I'd actually love to hear both Mike and Pete sound off on this. Is like, what are your thoughts about, I mean, the music world has changed significantly since the early 90s. I mean, this idea of MP3s and readily, like, basically by uploading an MP3 to a website, whether it be Tiberius's website or the, you know, Silo website, you have the option of reaching unlimited amount of people. You know, I mean, that has got to be so different than the days that you guys were recording, you know, in 92. I'm sure you guys were recording on, like, 8-tracks or doing, you know, it's such a different world with computers. And, you know, can you guys speak to that at all, and how you feel like that, you know, the music industry has changed and how this will affect either Tiberius, the record company, and or how this affects Silo?
I'll let Mike go first on this one.
Yeah, I think, you know, just like you said, there's an infinite amount of exposure possibilities if you're trying to get your music out there. But at the same time, it's so easy to make and record music and to distribute it, you know, over the internet or digitally or whatever. You know, I'm talking about every other means of distribution aside from actually getting them in a record store all over the country, which is still kind of hard for whatever reason, you know. But just like there's an infinite number of ways to get your music heard, there are also now an infinite number of bands, because anyone who feels like picking up any kind of instrument can easily get their music in equal spotlight with a band like Sonic the Husky that's been doing it for their whole lives. So there's so much more stuff to shift through until you find a band that you really like, because there's it amazes me how much stuff is out there. It's just
That's sort of a new challenge.
Yeah, it's like, you know, okay, yeah, so it's easier for me to get something to maybe like you guys or to even have this podcast happen, but then again, you could be doing this with literally probably one of millions of bands. There's so many bands out there.
Right.
You know, it's just a sea of talented and untalented people competing for the same, you know, limited number of listeners, I guess. So, I don't know. It's really good, but it's also, it makes it easier and harder at the same time. So, I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense.
That's actually, just hearing you say that, I hadn't thought about how,
like, the new model represents new challenges.
Yeah,
right?
Just like there's with every new, you know, with everything that becomes a little easier and then everything becomes faster with the internet, there's going to be 20, 30 new challenges that you've never had to deal with before that you're now.
And like you hear Pete talk, and I'm not a musician. I can't speak to that roller coaster that they've already endured and that they've already been through. But what I will say, Pete, is I found the band by whatever stroke of luck. I hadn't heard of them. I have listened to a ton of music before. Never came across you guys. And
Bobby, did you find them online?
I found them online. And I don't know how. The internet's so amazing that way. And I really would love to inject a little bit of maybe enthusiasm or motivation that you do not belong sitting back and going, fuck it, if you still want to be heard everywhere. You should put out new tracks. And I want to read to you something I found on a blog, because I'm such a nerd. Headline, two new Silo the Husky demos, February 21st, 2005. I don't know who's responsible for this. Yeah, we're not playing right now, and we might not play again, but I really like these two tunes we recorded. Until now, I haven't had a way to get them out. Thanks to the boys at Tiberius, I can now give it away. These tunes were performed with Neil on drums. Simple 8-track recording. Hope you enjoy the demos. If there was one thing that inspired me about you guys, other than the fact that you motivated to get on this call and we had all this craziness going on, if you put that much effort in just connecting with people that like you, you have a shot all over again, no matter what, if you want it, you know? You may not, and that's cool. You're giving away music. Tiberius is making the way for you to give away your best tracks, which a lot of labels aren't doing, a lot of bands aren't doing. They'll play a jukebox on their site, but you can't download that for free. You can't have that. Only people that are doing it a certain way are safe for us, and we're playing your music, you know?
So here's to you. Should we play one more track?
Well, yeah, we're going
to
do 7th Grade Arm Wrestling Tramp that is called a demo, and it's supposed to be maybe even more recent than Sons of Columbus. Is it on there? I haven't received the CD yet. It is on.
No, it's not on Sons of Columbus, and it's basically, it was recorded after Sons of Columbus, and I think it was recorded in the winter of 2004, so I think it's like about a year old.
If that's the shape of things to come, Pete, and if you know, Brian still has it in him and is passionate, I know you guys can do this whenever you want, but I'd love to hear a new album. And I think that in this mode, if this gets out there and you guys put some new twists on what you've already done, I mean, do it. And I think people will get things like these podcasts. If this is multiplied by 20 and there's 20 podcasts reaching 5,000 listeners, you guys can't sit around in your leather thongs.
Well, you can
arm wrestling.
Yeah. we'll probably get 10 comments from our listeners about
that's
something.
So good. I want leather thong
leather
arm wrestling.
Thongs. That's the next show theme. Okay. Leather thongs and Aqua Teen Swim.
Let's get right into arm wrestling with my leather thong.
All right, I don't want to dominate you guys. Just I want to hear more from you. It's been crazy. And then at the end of the song, can we let them wrap up?
About the ancient man who cut his wires.
Oh, Bob.
Yes!
Bobby, that was
beautiful. That's a killer track.
It is awesome.
I really wish we were going, we were recording at that point.
Oh, why?
Because you're popping, man.
I'm popping. We're overrunning these guys. They need to talk.
Yeah, it's probably late. They've probably got
to
go.
No, but
yeah.
It's not just about leaving. They need to say whatever they just what was their impression of what we're doing here.
Okay, yeah. What do you guys think? What do you guys think about podcasting? What do you think? Here's a question. What do you think?
I'm a podcast virgin. This is my first time.
Oh,
we're popping again.
What do you guys?
What did Mike say?
He said he's a podcast virgin.
What do you guys think?
Podcast virgin?
Yeah.
So I got a question before there's any more jokes about this virgin stuff. what do you guys think about copyright laws? I mean, they were designed to fit an old model. You know, they were designed to fit during a time when you really, when getting information from one person to another required that you had some sort of medium, whether paper
like
or
physical
or tape or whatever. And now we live in an era where, you know, you can email somebody music. What do you think that the copyright laws that we have in place now are still valuable?
Well, I'm going to go and start off this and say that, I mean, all I have to do is read, you know, Rolling Stone or any one of the industry magazines and see where, you know, basically the record industry is losing their ass at this point, because, you know, they're making money in royalties as well, you know, along with the artists, you know, and the artists are complaining that they're not making any money. You know, the copyright laws right now, I mean, they benefited Silo. I mean, I've got a money order on the side of my refrigerator for the past 5 years, or a money bond certificate I bought from the U.S. government for the only royalty check I got, which was like $40. So, I mean, yeah, I guess it does have its place, but you know, is the current model outdated? Yeah, I think to a degree it possibly might be outdated. The copyright laws favor at this point, and I don't know, it would be like a tax code. It favors bands that are selling multiple units and have the legal muscle to either make sure they get paid, or, you know, they have the record label behind them where they can get their money and the royalties off it. And that's what it really boils down to. Does an artist want to have their stuff protected? Sure they do. Do they want not to be ripped off? Sure. All you have to do is look at all the Motown artists, you know, through the 50s and 60s and see how they basically got really ripped off. Their money, even some of the bigger bands coming out of the 60s. So yeah, I think copyright laws do have its place. Has it moved with the times? No, it hasn't. You know, it has really hasn't a lot. Does MP3 playing and all that technology have viable input in the market nowadays? It definitely does. It definitely does. But can we say that MP3 playing and blogging and podcasting is the end-all solution to getting music out there? It's one viable asset that a musician or an artist or multimedia has of getting exposure to certain things. But just like the internet was brought out, and they said, oh, the internet's going to replace everything back in the mid-90s or, you know, into early 90s, the internet's just a supplement as well to all the multimedia outlets that are out there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I hear you completely.
110%.
Yeah, I mean, I think
Mike,
it's good to have an artist perspective, because you know, as a show producer, I'm out here thinking, God, you know, I just want it to be easier for me to get my hands on some material, you know, like, I mean, on a very honest level. So I'm, well,
that was good.
I think your intentions are a lot different from some people who the laws were maybe written to protect artists against. Like, some people might not be as pure or as true-hearted as you guys, where they just want to spread exposure to a certain band or something. Like, you're doing it because you're passionate about music and you want other people to share in the music that you find worthwhile. Whereas some people might think, you know what, I really need some background music for my car jingle. I'm going to steal Silo the Husky's song and use that to sell cars, which is a lot different than...
Right, I mean, that's completely different.
What's that?
I said, yeah, that's completely different to be like, there's a there's sharing and liking and using for personal use, and then there's reappropriating or having it changed from its original
intent. There's a difference between a commercial interest and, you know,
a personal
interest. Have you guys heard of Creative Commons? Do you guys have that on your site? I can't remember.
Their site is actually down, guys. Tiberius is up. Silo doesn't have an official site, which is making me angry.
Do you know about Creative Commons, though, Mike?
Creative what? I'm sorry. Can't
Creative Commons. It's a license.
Creative.
Yeah, it's an attempt at making a difference in terms of the copyright law, where you can stipulate. You can say, yeah, you can have this track for free, as long as you're not using it for commercial interest. As long as you're not making money off of using it.
Right. Okay.
You know, which is sort of like, it's like a clause. You know, we don't have that in the current copyright law. It's like you either can or you can't have it. It's sort of, sort of black and white, and it's based on the idea that you can only get the music if you buy something at a store. And I don't know.
Right.
So I think the Creative Commons is sort of an effort at addressing a new distribution model and also a new interest in uses for the media, you know, for people that are trying to promote stuff, like, go ahead, promote it, you know, have it.
But I think I want to interject here, and I want to bring up a couple things that, you know, and then Mike, I'd like to hear what Mike thinks about it as well. Is when you look at, it's like prohibition, you know, when you go out and you ban Napster and you ban the free downloads. I mean, the bottom line is that if someone wants music, they're going to get it. They're going to find ways to get it, whether it's, you know, off the internet or burning a CD at home or ripping or whatever the case may be. If someone wants something bad enough, they're going to get it. And, you know, it's, and it also boils down to, and I had to collect my thoughts for a second, you know, what is the, as a musician, what's your, you know, your bottom line? Are you an artist trying to just promote your art through all the media channels, or are you trying to make money? And I think there's a big difference. If you're like trying to be a pop artist, trying to make money and try to climb the ladder of success, I think that's a very different thing than just being a, you know, an artist, as, you know, we kind of envision the band, you know, expressing ourselves and just wanting to make music for the creative level. And I don't know, Mike, I mean, how do you feel about that? You know, either, you know, people are going to get music however they want, and there's a difference between being an artist trying to promote your music and versus trying to just, you know, be the record label trying to make the money, that kind of thing.
I understand the distinction and everything, and I think I agree with you and that we're on the same side of it, but just to play devil's advocate, I mean, as much as an artist who is purely in it for art's sake wants to get their music heard, it does take time and effort and resources to make that happen. First, you have to, you know, invest your time, you have to invest your money to buy the equipment to do it, you have to either buy gear or pay for a recording studio to go and make the music and put it on some sort of medium that can be distributed. And then once, you know, you have to, you know, get copies of it duplicated, you have to send CDs out, it costs postage, or you have to build an internet site, or you have to pay for hosting, or whatever you have to do, whether it's, on some level there are expenses that the artist will incur. So at what point do you cross the line where you think, you know what, I like this so much, I'm willing to sink $100, I'm willing to sink $100,000 into getting what I think is artistically, you know, worthy out there for other people to view or listen to or whatever. So in some sense, it's just, you know, I think it is nice that artists on some level can get some money back, but something definitely needs to be done with copyright laws to address, you know, the internet, basically. Like, there's so many new means of distribution for music and for ideas that the laws just, they were, you know, like these guys said, were built on such an old model, they're almost defunct now, so.
But that's like that.
I agree with you.
Everyone's like, good point, we need to speak.
But do you guys think that this is the death? When Napster came out, I thought, oh, well, maybe this is the death of the record label.
I don't think there is a death of the record label.
No, maybe not. Maybe
I think there's a diversification of the record label.
Because they'll buy other entities that are doing what they want.
Universal will always find Britney Spears, you know, or whatever.
Yeah,
I don't know.
But they'll buy someone who's already managing that content, someone who's already packaging it. They'll buy it. They don't even need to go find it anymore. They'll buy the thing that's already working. when I mean, with podcasting, anyone can hear anything without the need of an A&R guy, without any of that. You record an album, you play it out there. Thousands of people can hear
Mike, what he's saying. But Mike brought up the same point earlier. The new problem is the signal through the noise. How do you find the good bands in a sea of
crap?
Anybody's, you know, and that's going to be increasingly difficult to navigate for the user to navigate through.
Well, yeah, sometimes just cause it's luck.
Just because you have a Casio, Bob, and a nifty name like Break the Trash Can.
That's cool. I like that.
As I'm telling you, or you know, crush the bug doesn't make you a good artist. What? You know, and that's
I like Spider Seeker or Sweatmaster.
Sweatmaster's been taken.
I think,
but you know, the thing that the question begs for me on this is like he's talking about like trying to like we have to somehow retool our copyright laws so that we take into consideration some of these the sharing abilities, P2P shares.
Right, so different artists can make choices about how they want their work copywritten.
Right, so there's some leniency so that you actually have control over your copyright. But then the question that comes to my mind is, let's say you bring in that you want, like, you can share, but for every share, there's a certain amount of royalty thing involved. How would you – you can't even track the amount of people
that
share becomes – you can't police it at all, so.
Right, and that was that you brought that up, and that's what like one of the challenges I was thinking. I mean, once you put it out there, Mike, it just goes into the ethos. It almost doesn't exist anymore.
Absolutely. Just goes, so you never know if anyone heard it. You never know any of that. I mean, with radio stations, they at least report a playlist or something. So that's what those publishing laws are based on. They report to different publishing companies, and they pay their members royalties based on what percentage of whatever song got played, and you know whether it was radio or television markets or whatever. But with the internet, I mean, how in the hell do you find out who was listening to it?
Right,
right. Just,
but in some ways,
the answer is at all. Because
in some ways, the internet has potential to allow us more tracking possibilities. You can, you know, I could just see a couple of years from now, you know, a way of actually sending the artist a little message anytime anybody ever listens to any song, you know,
like
so
a transmission.
I mean, because it's all digital, it's all there's, you know, there's some sort of way to track that.
Are you talking about like our emails when I hear comments from Notes from the Underground and it comes straight to my inbox? Is
I'm sure Bill Gates knows.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's already got one.
He probably knows, just said his name,
right? The MP99 player,
yeah.
It's pretty cool.
The record got that much harder.
Well, hey, listen, you guys, it's getting pretty late. Maybe
I want to go out with one.
We have one more track.
Listen to a song.
Do you guys want to go out with 4 and 20 or Northern Southern?
That's up to Petey. I got to get back to work. All that.
We don't have the
final first one.
I only have the 4 you sent me.
I think we have Northern Southern. Okay, we got the
one.
All right,
cool. Let's go into Northern Southern,
guys,
and then we'll do a little wrap up.
We'll do a wrap up at the end of the song. You only have to wait 12 seconds.
I'll let you wrap up.
Mike, thanks for joining.
All right, buddy. Bye.
See you, Mike. I appreciate it a lot, you guys. Great.
Hey, no problem. Take care.
Pete, thanks for staying up late. Not a problem, man. You know, it gets harder when you get older. Yeah, I'm not your age yet. I'll talk to you guys later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Back in Spider Town, the ghost of soldiers and dropouts haunt the halls of the courthouse, looking for a good way.
All right.
Yep. So we got Pete left over.
I don't know.
What was that? Who said seamless?
I don't know what the hell.
Oh, that was in your song.
Oh, my God. That was great. Oh, that's like something on the end of that.
At the very end of that track.
Seamless.
I thought that was somebody here.
Yeah,
in the room.
Someone was in the recording and like it got picked up at the last second.
Was right, like,
Pete, I listened to that music with my headphones on now, and I love it that way. It sounds so much. It's just great, you know. I hope you guys continue to put out new music. In fact, you should make us a small Notes from the Underground exclusive. No, it doesn't have to be anything serious, but we would love to hear from you because there's, you know, I hope this isn't the last time we talk. And I don't know why I found you guys.
Yeah, we'd like to know if you guys have any noticeable impact on
CD
like,
sales.
You know, your sales or your website or, I guess the website's down. But
and there was one other thing I wanted to ask you about. I read about a VH1 Behind the Music, and I don't know, never had seen that either. And that was another thing that you've done along the way. Did that ever air?
Behind the Music?
I read this in an article. I don't know if it actually ever happened.
No, I never read that at all. And that's actually the first I've heard of it. So, ooh, I mean, I don't think anybody in the band is. I don't think anybody in the band was either hooked on dope or a prostitute or a transvestite or, you know, and none of our drummers.
So you guys never recorded?
No, there was an article that said, maybe it was a joke, maybe I read it wrong, but it was a VH1 thing. You know what, it was probably an allusion to that, considering your longevity and that you'd been around for 11 years, that was whatever, we'll strike that.
You know, Bobby works at Access Hollywood, so he's always trying to get dirt on
now
people.
Now you've really done it. Now you've done it. Blown my credibility.
There goes cover.
Worked at riff.com. I work at... whatever. All right.
I think there was a couple of things that were brought up tonight that were really cool, and I think, you know, we could have definitely with Mike on the, you know, on the other phone line talked definitely about, you know, if the record label was dead or, you know, and we could have definitely talked at least another hour about the state of the music industry or the dangerous state of the music industry or the, you know, disrepair of the music industry, you know, and I think, you know, as long as new music's coming out, it's frustrating right now because there really is a lot of crap that just permeates from society.
Right.
You know, but it's, you know, it's things like that where shows like yours or people just on the internet looking for stuff, they find things they want. You know, and maybe, you know, I don't want to say this and then we can, I guess if you guys need to wrap it up, but if you look what happened to the record industry through the 80s and 90s where, you know, they basically tore down, you know, they conglomerated, they merged a lot. They got rid of a lot smaller labels like, you know, Elektra or, you know, A&M. You know, in the farm system, you know, the system where they are bringing the artists up and nurturing them and getting ready to put them on the bigger labels, you know, that's all gone now. There's not a whole lot of that left anymore. And maybe the internet is taking the slack up on that. Maybe the internet is where the bands are at now, you know, right before they break it big or, you know, doing their own thing without the pressure of worrying about what record's going to come out next or, you know, what the royalty check's going to be or whatever. And I think that's something that maybe, you know, the listeners should kind of think about as well.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's a lot of changes in there, and we're right in the forefront of it. And, you know, hopefully that there's, you know, not just an economic change, but there's some legal changes to accommodate some of that.
An entire model change, yeah. You know, if at all possible, that would be... best case scenario.
Well,
okay, I want to just go out with this quote from the site. I think this comes from Tiberius, and if it doesn't, screw me. The following songs from Sons of Columbus. The following songs sit you down and lock the doors, but you don't mind because that chair is comfortable, and for the first time in a long time, you're actually enjoying the conversation you're having. You talk about work a lot, but it's good. It's inevitable and worthwhile, and it's something to take pride in. You talk about traveling with your friends and missing your family at home. You talk about heritage and reconciliation. You talk about music, and you both agree that corporate rock can eat a dick. That's from wherever
can eat
it came
a dick
from.
Straight up.
Silo the Husky, you rule.
Thanks, Pete. Hey. It's been great talking with you. You've been a great guest, and, you know,
and look for the show on Saturday.
Yeah, we'll post it. We'll post it on Saturday before noon.
Cool. I just want to give mad props to Mike from Tiberius, man. Those guys have been great to us. They've been great friends, and without them, this record definitely would have come out. Hopefully people can hear this prop as well. I want to thank everybody that's at least listened to the music and liked it, and that's gratification enough to keep us playing.
Awesome.
So cool.
Well, have a great night, Pete.
Guys, rock LA, brother. It sounds awesome out there. And, you guys, stay in touch, and we'll let you know what's going down on our end.
That sounds great.
See Start ya. A new record.
All right.
All right, you got it.
Night.
All right. See you guys.